Holding unlimited vav, Amud Beis, 8 lines from the bottom. We were discussing the question of so a person does yibum, with his, or chalitza with his yivama, and she's pregnant. Is that chalitza or yibum valid? And then we talked about what happens if she actually has a healthy baby. Vlad Shokayama, where after all, then in that case, no chalitza or yibum was necessary. So what are the consequences then? So the Gemara says, Omelet of Ashi, Lit of Hoshia Breda Ravidi, Hosem Tanan. Now we learn in a Mishnah, elsewhere, in Nida, Kol Shasha, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Kol Shasha, Ba'odam, Tanan, Tanya, really, it's a Braisa. Anyway, Rav Shimon Gamliel, any baby that survived for 30 days is not a nafel. Meaning, in other words, even let's say, for example, the baby was born premature, where the Gemara always assumes that a baby born premature during the 8th month is not going to survive, but if he lasts for 30 days, then he's not considered a nafel. And therefore, that would mean that he pasters his mother from chalitza or yibum. Now, the implication is that if he didn't live for 30 days, then it would be a suffix. The itmar, and we have a discussion of Amiroyim related to that. If it was a suffix, then we would say that she needs chalitza, she can't do yibum. Rashi also adds that actually, if we know for a fact that the baby was born after a full 9-month pregnancy, for example, the couple had relations and then he went on a trip and hasn't been back since, then the halacha would be actually, we wouldn't even need to wait 30 days. Then even on the day he's born, he would already pass his mother from yibum or chalitza. But if we're not sure, then we have to wait 30 days. And if now the baby died during the 30 days, then it would be a suffix. Rashi also adds, by the way, that when we say that it dies within the 30 days, what we mean is, we talked about yesterday the idea of pihik or mess, that what happens if the baby yawned and then died? Does that mean that to begin with he was weak and he obviously wasn't going to survive, or not? So Rashi says that even in that case, we're talking about over here it's a suffix. Tosfa says that no. In that case, that definitely even the Chachamim against Reb Shimon Gamliel would agree that he's considered a nafel. Rather, what we're talking about over here is if an accident happened to the baby. The examples that the Gemara gives in Masechta Shabbos, which Tosfos quotes, are that it fell off the roof or was eaten by a lion. Where there we would say that there the machlokes would be. Would we say, well, I mean, if it hadn't been for that, probably the baby would have lived a long, healthy life? Or do we say the fact is it did die within 30 days? Anyway. So now we have a discussion on this topic. Mes b'soich lamed yoim. What happens if the baby died within 30 days? V'omdav niskadsha, and the woman went and was niskadish, figuring that she had gone and been niskadish during the 30 days, figuring that the baby is going to be healthy and therefore she's potter from yibum. Now in the end, the baby died within the 30 days. So Ravina Mishmei de Rava Amar, Im Eishes Yisraeli. So Ravina tells us in the name of Rava, if she's Miskadish to a Yisrael, and then therefore, so if she does Chalitza, then there's no problem. She'll still be Mutter to him. Then Chalitzas, then she needs to do Chalitza, and then she's able to marry this new husband. If she's niskadish to a koyan, we're there as a chalutza, she'll be also to a koyan. Ain't a chalutzas, then we say we don't require her to do chalitza because after all the whole thing is only a suffix, and we don't want to unnecessarily ask her to her new husband.
How was she allowed to originally even get married to someone else without doing Giba Mechalitza if she...
But that's the thing. She had a baby. She figured, therefore, good, I have a baby. Well, then I can get remarried. Oh. There's obviously Mechalitza or Yibum necessary. Now okay. The baby died within 30 days. Right. So Ravina is telling us that if she's engaged to a Kohen, then that she doesn't need Chalitza because we don't want to ask her to him. Tosfos discusses earlier in the Masechta on Daf Chav Daled, Gilyon HaShasher, Rabbi Akiva Eger references it over here that if she gets Chalitza afterwards, people are going to think that after all the Chachamim figured out that the baby was a Nefil. And then they required chalitza. People are going to think that a chalitza is allowed to marry a kohen, as opposed to an earlier case where it talks about there about suffolk chalitza, where there the whole thing itself, whether she needed the whole thing itself, whether she needed chalitza or not, itself was a suffolk, and they figured out that she didn't. So therefore, that would be different. Anyway, that's Ravina. Rav Meshashia Mishmeder Rava Omar Achasu Chalitzas. Rav Meshashia says in the name of Rava, so they're both saying in the name of Rava, Ravina and Rav Meshashia. So Rav Meshashia says in the name of Rava that she does need Chalitza either way. Omar Le Ravina Le Rav Meshashia. So Ravina says, you should know the reason why you're thinking that. Ravina and Rav Meshashia. Yeah. So Ravina says to Rav Meshashia, you should know the reason why you're thinking that she needs chalitza is Ba'urta Omer Rava. That's what Rava said yesterday evening. Or with Safra Hodabe, but in the morning he changed his mind. Not yesterday evening, whatever. One evening when he was teaching us in Ves Medrash, he taught us the way you're saying that they need chalitza either way. Or with Safra Hodabe, but in the morning he changed his mind. So therefore, so I have the more up-to-date information where Robert changed his mind and said by a Kohen, we can rely on the fact that there was a baby and that there's a good likelihood that it wasn't a Nefil and therefore that she's allowed to stay married without Chalitza. Omaleh, again, subject to the Machlokas of Rashi and Tosfos, are we talking about that the baby died seemingly of natural causes or are we talking about that the baby, for example, fell off a roof or something? Anyway. Omalei, so Rav Meshashia says, Shavitu, so you've been matirit. Yehei Rabba, the Tishteru Aftarba, may it be Hashem's will that you're matir also chaylev. In other words, in effect, he's saying to Ravina, I think that you're going too far. I think that you misunderstood Rava or something. You're being matir, something which is clearly osir. And if you're going to do that, the next thing you're going to do is going to be matir chaylev. It's a harsh expression. It's a harsh expression to use, and in fact, there's an explanation that there's an explanation from Rav Tzadik HaKohen that he's telling him something like it should happen in the future. I hope that it happens in the future that you accidentally end up being matir chaylev, so that you'll realize from that what a mistake you're making, and then you'll come to realize that in this case also you're making a serious mistake. And the Aruch Oner softens it a bit. He says there's actually machloikas elsewhere in the Gemara between Rabbi Shmuel, who was a Kohen, and other Chachamim about a certain kind of fat, whether it's mutter. So Rav Meshashia is telling Ravina, in effect, listen, you're taking the side of the Kohenim to be matir, this lady, to stay married to her husband. Well, then you're going to end up being matir, the kind of fat that Rabbi Shmuel is matir, who is also a Kohen. Anyway, the point is that Rav Meshashia says, I don't accept what you're saying, I still stick with what Rava said originally. You're saying he changed his mind. I don't know. I think you're misunderstanding it. Well, now with all that introduction, Rav Ashi asked Rav Hoshea Bre Deravid. Hocha. Now that's all the machloikas about whether about again. She had a baby. She did. She married somebody else, figuring she doesn't need Yibum or Chalitza. In the event it turned out that the baby died. So what do we do? So now Rav Ashi asks, Hocha, in the case that we were talking about just before that in the Gemara, Gabi Meuberes Chaveiro Menekes Chaveiro, and Asur LaKoyin. Suppose that a man marries a woman who was pregnant or nursing from a previous husband, where we said yesterday that he's not supposed to marry her during her pregnancy or during the 24 months while she's nursing. Now we said that Reb Meir had said that he has to divorce her and can never remarry her. The Chachamim say he divorces her, but they can remarry later. But either of those is going to be a problem for a Kohen. So Hocha Gabi Mo Beres What would be the din? Asked Rav Ashi. Mi over Rabbanan takanta l'koyin oloi. If we assume, like Ravina, that in the case of the Yavama, we say that we're makel because her new husband is a koyin and we don't want to answer her to him. So do we say the same thing by moberes chaveiro or menechs chaveiro? Don't require them to get divorced because then he won't be able to remarry her. Oloi, or do we not say that? So the question is within the Chachamim's opinion, where the Chachamim allow them to get remarried afterwards, and also within Rabina's opinion that we're makel for a koyin. Amalei, so Rav Hoshea, Breidit of Idi tells him, Hochi Hashta, how are you thinking to even compare the two cases? Vishlema Hossam, you can understand why in the case of the Machlokas Rav Meir and the Chachamim, or in the case of the Yavama rather, Kibin de Ikur Rabbanan de Pligi Alei de Rav Shimon Gamliel, where after all you have the Chachamim disagreeing with Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Amri, and they say, Afgab de Leshah, Vlad Mal Yahavi, they say even though the baby didn't survive for 30 days, it still was a normal baby. Again, according to Rashi, even we're talking about Piyak Vemes, according to Tosfos, we're talking about only if there was an accident. So fine, so we have the Chachamim to rely on. So therefore, Gabi Eshes Koyin, so therefore, if she's going to be remarrying a Koyin, Kivin Delay Efshir, since it's impossible to do any other way, because if we require her to do Chalitza, then she's not going to be able to marry him, Avdin and Kirabon, and then we can follow the Chachamim and say that she won't require Chalitza in that case, and we'll accept that it was a normal baby. Aval Hocha, but, continues Rav Hoshea, in our case, you're asking about Muberes Chaveiro and Menechets Chaveiro, the fact is everybody requires them to get divorced. Keman Nevet, so who do you want to follow? Ikir Rav Meir, Ha'ama Yotzi V'la Yachzu Elamis. After Rav Meir says he has to divorce her and can never remarry, V'ikir Rabbanan Ha'amri B'get. And the Chachamim say that he requires a get. So either way, Rav Hoshea, Breidit of Idi, tells Rav Ashi, there's no real room for your question, no matter what. Koyin or not Koyin, the fact is, both opinions, Rav Meir and the Chachamim, hold that they need to get divorced. If that means that she can't marry the guy afterwards, tough luck. Okay, so now another discussion. So now a related point, Itmar, Kidsha B'Seich Shloisha U'Barach. What happens in the case, now we're not talking about a pregnant woman or a nursing woman. In general, as we're going to talk about later on in the perek, whenever a woman remarries, you need to wait 3 months. So even if she's just a regular almona or grusha, and she's not pregnant. So now, kidsha b'seich shloisha u'barach. What happens if he was mekadesher during the three months, and then he ran away? So pligi bar Rav Acha v'Rafram. So now Rav Acha and Rafram argue what we do. Chad amam meshamtinen le. One says we put him in cherem to force him to divorce her. V'chad amam, and the other one says a ruke mistaye. V'chad amam a ruke mistaye. The other one says the fact that he ran away itself is good enough. We don't need anything else. So what's the point? How does running away help? Rashi explains that what it means is once he ran away, that demonstrates that he doesn't plan to marry her until the time. And in fact, based on that, the Rosh explains that would mean he had to run away far enough where he can't be back within the 3 months. So then we wouldn't require anything further. Three months is to make sure that she's not already pregnant, and then we would get. On the other hand, the Rambam learns that the vort is that the running away is kind of a kapara for him. So therefore, that takes the place of having to put him in nidui. So according to the Rambam, he'd been makadish a woman who was previously married within 3 months after the end of her previous marriage. Any woman. We're not talking about pregnant or whatever. But we don't know whether she's pregnant yet.
Right.
No, it doesn't matter whether he's Yeah. So the Rambam learns that just the fact that he runs away itself is a certain kapara for him, and therefore that makes it that we don't need to put him in nidui. So the Gemara says, Hava Uvda, there was actually a case like that. Well, Amalahu Rafram, Eruki Mistaye, and Rafram told the Chachamim that the fact that he ran away is good enough, which therefore it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, not only then if he runs away, now again, according to the Rosh, we're saying maybe he needs to run away so far that he can't be back within 3 months, but whatever the case, it actually mentions in Shulchan Aruch, the Tur brings it, and then the Shulchan Aruch brings it from there, we actually advise him, we the Beis Din will advise him, if he was Mekadesh, this woman, within 3 months, run away, and that way we won't have to, that way we won't have to put you in Chayim.
I'd love to see that.
So.
Run.
Okay. Yeah.
What?
There is actually something I came across that there was a tshuva from some rav where the situation was that the husband is not able to run away. So they told him. So they said in that case let the wife run away. Let the she who is engaged or whatever who was in Scottish whatever let her run away. It'll accomplish the same thing.
He wasn't able to.
I don't remember. I don't remember what it was. But whatever. Okay. Next,
okay.
we said in the Mishnah Suffolk Bentesh of Achula. We had suppose now we said in the Mishnah that suppose the guy did Yibum, then it turns out that she's pregnant. So the last part of the Mishnah says that when she has a baby, if that baby is a Suffolk, whether it's from the first husband or from the second, so Yotzi Vavlad Kosher. So we said he has to divorce her because there's a possibility that this baby is from her first husband, and then Yibum was not warranted, and they were over on Eishes Ach. And however, the baby himself is kosher because either way, either he's from the first husband or from the second. And if he's from the first, then he's kosher, and he's from the second, then it means that Yibum was necessary, and therefore it's kosher. However, they're chayv and Oshem Tolu again because there's a suffix whether they. Whether they did something that's chayiv kares or not. So the Gemara says, "Amalei Rav Lord of Nachman, Lema. Why are we saying that he has to divorce her? Lema holach acharoyv noshim. Why don't we say that we follow the majority of women? V'roiv noshim latisha yoldon. And most women give birth after 9 months. No. So the question is why he has to divorce her. The question is, why are they bringing an Oshem Tolui? Why aren't they bringing an actual Chatas? There's a much higher likelihood that this is a baby from the first husband, which means that no Yibum should have been done, which means that they're Chayav Chatas. Why are instead of we saying Oshem Tolui? The Roiv Nosham Latisha Yoldan, because most women, after all, give birth after 9 months. Omalei, so Rav Nachman says, Noshididan, Lashiva Yoldan. Well, all women. Maybe Rav Nachman means his own wife. Maybe he means women from his family, whatever. From his generation, yeah. L'shiva yoldan, they give birth after 7 months. Omalei, so Rava says, Nishedi didchu habaruba da'ama. So what? That's a minority. The majority give birth after 9 months. Are they the majority? Omalei, so Rav Nachman says, let me explain. Hochi ka'amina. Rav nashim yoldan latisha. It's true that most women give birth after 9 months. Umiyot l'shiva. It's also true that there's a minority who give birth after 7. V'chol hayeledes l'tisha ubra nikir l'shlish yameha. Now, whenever a woman is going to give birth after 9 months, you'll be able to see that she's pregnant after 1/3 of that time, after 3 months. V'zu hoyo v'leihuka ubra l'shlish yameha. This one we did not yet recognize at the end of 3 months whether she's pregnant. It has to be, Rashi says, because otherwise there wouldn't be a suffix. If we saw that if the Yavam, let's say, did Yibum after a month, after his brother passed away, and then 2 months later we noticed that she's pregnant, obviously that's going to be from the first husband. So the whole point is that we're talking about over here where he did Yibum within the 3 months. Now, Tosfos had pointed out in the Mishnah that if he did Yibum after 3 months, then we don't even make them bring an Oshem Tolui, because then it's a complete onus after 3 months. It ought to have been recognizable. But the point is that we didn't see at the three-month mark that she's pregnant yet. He did do Yibum within the 3 months, which he shouldn't have. Now, therefore, because we didn't see it after 3 months, itra la ruba, therefore, that ruins the roiv. Now we say she might not be the roiv of women. She might be she might be part of that mute, and therefore it might be a 7-month baby. So the Gemara actually in Sanhedrin discusses the possibility that maybe a 7-month baby you would be able to recognize after only 1/3 of 7 months, which would be two months and a fraction. But here, all Gemara seems to be saying differently, that once we have, it comes the 3-month period from one of the 3-month point from when her husband died, she's not visibly pregnant yet, then we don't really know. She might be carrying a 7-month baby or a 9-month baby. We really don't know. Anyway, so the question is, what do you mean if you're saying that all women who give birth at 9 months are recognizably pregnant after 3 months? Well, then in this case, where you didn't, then there's no question that it would be a 7-month baby. Ella Ema, you're right. We have to fix it up. Most women who give birth after 9 months, the pregnancy is noticeable after 3 months. Here, since it wasn't Itra La Ruba, then therefore that ruins the Roiv. Therefore, that makes it a possibility that in fact it is a seven month baby, and therefore it could well be from the Yavam, and we can't really be sure. That is why we do force them to get divorced on the possibility that it was from the first husband, but we don't declare. Forget about a mamzer. It's not a mamzer either way. What we don't say that they should have to bring a chatas because it's not definite that they did an iser. It's only a suffix, and a suffix iser means an oshem tali.
Oh. But they bring an oshem tali. It's more expensive.
It is more expensive. That's true. Okay. Okay.
It's a lot more
expensive. It is indeed. Okay. There's an explanation about that. That because when a person does an aveda deliberately, when a person is certain they know they did an aveda, they feel really bad about it. Therefore, they don't need as much of a kapara. Whereas when a person is not sure, they're always going to rationalize. It probably wasn't really an aveda. Therefore, the Torah imposes on them a much more expensive carbon.
So what they're saying is that every baby of 7 months.
Right, but we're saying most babies of 9 months are recognizable after 3 months, but a baby of 7 months may or may not be, right?
But then they're saying, well, maybe every baby of 9 months is not recognizable either.
That's what we're saying. It can't be every baby of 9 months, because otherwise the fact that it wasn't recognizable at 3 months means that she's definitely not a 9 month, that it's definitely not a 9 month baby. Right. So therefore we have to say, even among the 9 month babies, most of them are unrecognizable after 3 months, but not all of them. Right. Tosfos actually discusses over here that after all, it sometimes takes a couple of days for the zera to be nikla, for fertilization to take place. So why are we saying exactly 3 months? So there's an explanation, in fact, that when we're talking about over here, that Nikola Shlish Yameha, we don't mean it's exactly at the 3 month mark, it's visible. We mean a few days either side of that. And therefore, that would dispose of that question. We learn in a Braisa. Rishon Roy Lias Kohen Gadol, the first baby born from this, if his father was a Kohen, then he's Roy even to be a Kohen Gadol. Tosfos actually refers to a Gemara in Ksubas that says that where a person doesn't know who his father is, then we prevent him from being we prevent him from serving as a Kohen. However, the Tosfos also explains that the Gemara explains that's when they were mezaneh. Here we're not talking about the reznus. Here we're talking about he did get married. He thought he needs to do yibum. So we're not going to prevent that child from acting as a kohen, and he could even conceivably be a kohen gadol, meaning he's a fully kosher yid. Because again, either he's a 9 month baby, in which case he comes from the first husband, and then it was a perfectly valid thing, or he's a 7 month baby, meaning that the first brother did not have any children, and therefore yibum was necessary, and he's from the yavam. So good, either way, he's kosher. The Shani, now on the other hand, if they remain married, the Mishnah had said we have to force them to separate. But let's say they did that, we have to force them to divorce. But let's say we didn't yet, and they have another baby, then mamzer is suffix, and it's a suffix whether he's a mamzer, because maybe she's Eishes Achiv without Yibum, or maybe not. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says there's no mamzer is suffix. Now, what do we mean by that? My karmar, What does the Braisa mean? What exactly are the Chachamim and Rabbi Lezib and Yaakov arguing about? So Amar Abaya Hachikama, it means like this: Rishon Roy Lias Kohen Gadol. Again, the first one we're saying is Roy to be a Kohen Gadol because he's perfectly kosher either way. V'sheni Sofik Mamzer v'Osir b'Mamzeres. The second one, as a Sofik Mamzer, is going to be Osir to marry a Mamzeres because it's a suffix after all. He might be a kosher to yid, he might not, and therefore we can't. Now, mamzer himself would be allowed to marry a mamzeres, but he's only a suffix mamzer. Therefore, we can't marry a mamzeres either, because he might be a kosher to yid. And now Abaya says, Rebbe Eliezer Oimer, that now Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov is saying, Eino Sofik Mamzer, Ela Vadai Mamzer, that no, Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov is saying he's not a Sofik Mamzer, he's a Vadai Mamzer, and therefore Mutar ben Mamzeres, and therefore he's allowed to marry a Mamzeres. So it comes out, in other words, that Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov is coming to be Mekel on the guy. The Chachamim would say that he's stuck, he can't marry either one. Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov would say that at least he can marry a Mamzeres. Rava Amar, Rava learns the Braisa differently. Hachak Amar, Rishon Le'Roi is Kohen Gadol, V'Sheni Mamzer Vadai Misafik. The second one is the other way around. Rava learns the Tanakama of the Braisa is saying that the second one is a Mamzer Vadai as a result of the Safik, meaning because of the Safik, whether the first baby was from the first husband or the second, therefore that Safik is strong enough to make the second baby be considered definitely a Mamzer or Mutar b'Mamzeres, therefore he's allowed to marry a Mamzeres, whereas Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov ein Vadai Mamzer Misafik, El a Safik Mamzer, no, he can't be a Vadai Mamzer, he's a Safik Mamzer, and therefore also b'Mamzeres. So it would come out, according to Rabbah, that Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov is coming to be Machmir on him. The Tanakama would say he's allowed to marry a Mamzeres, and Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov would say that he can't. Now, what's the underlying machlokas? What's the underlying machlokas Abaya and Rava? So the Gemara says, Abaya and Rava are arguing within what Rabbi Lazar says. The Tanan, Rabbi Lazar Omer, Vadan b'Vadan Mutar, a Vadai Mamzer is allowed to marry another Vadai Mamzer. But Vadon b'sfeikon, or Sfeikon b'Vadon, or Sfeikon b'Sfeikon also. But a Vadai Mamzer is not allowed to marry a Sufik Mamzer, or vice versa, and a Suffolk is not allowed to marry another Suffolk, because after all, every Suffolk is he might be a kosher a yid, and therefore, and then he's marrying a Mamzer, then you have a problem. The Elohein Sfeikon. What are the definitions of Sfeikon for this purpose? Shsuki va'asufi v'kusim, or Shsuki, which is that we don't know who his father is. So Shsuki literally means be quiet, because when he asks his mother, who's my father, she tells him be quiet, because she was Mizana and she has no idea who the father was. So we don't know whether the father was a Mamzer or a Kosher Yid or what. She may not even know herself, but that may also be true. Yeah. Anyway, that's Shsuki. Asufi would be a foundling, a baby that's found abandoned in the street, and you don't know who his parents are. B'chlal, he might even be a Goyish kid, but if he's a Yiddish kid, then he might well be a Mamzer. There's an interesting book that came out probably almost 30 years ago, I think, called The Bamboo Cradle. A very interesting book, by the way, well worth reading. This is a Jewish couple living in China in the 70s, not from at all. They found a baby abandoned in a train station and adopted her. A kitzer amaisa, they wanted to be Megayer her, and eventually that brought the whole family back to Yiddishkeit. Anyway, it's a fascinating book. But anyway, so early on in the book, they mention that when they're thinking about they want to be Megayer her, they start wondering, well, after all, do we even need to? Isn't there a possibility that she's a Jewish kid? And a Rav tells them, listen, if she is, you have bigger problems. She might conceivably be a Mamzeres. You're much better off assuming that in fact she is a Goyish kid, and therefore you can be Megayer her, no problems, Mamzeres or anything, and Kachava. Anyway, so an Asufi. Well, the point is, in other words, what the Rav was passing for them, but the point is,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, so that's
don't ask for this, yeah. You might get it.
What pretty much. For. And Rekusi, and a Kusi is a suffix because you have the machloikas all over Shas, whether the Kusi is Geri Arayas or Geri Emes. Shsuki Vasuki Rekusi, you say. But Amr Rav Yehuda Amr Rav, Halacha Ke Rav Elazar. Now, Rav Yehuda tells us in the name of Rav that the Halacha is like Rav Elazar. And Rav Yehuda continues, Ki Amrita Kamei Shmuel. When I told this over to Shmuel, because Rav passed away 7 years before Shmuel, so after Rav passed away, Rabbi Yehuda went to learn by Shmuel. We're out of there. Go get from the shelf. So when I told this over to Shmuel, Omali, he tells me, how could Rav say the halacha is like Rabbi Lazar? Hillel Shana, Hillel, that could mean Hillel, the original Hillel from Hillel and Shammai, or it could mean a later Tana of that name. Anyway, he taught the Mishnah that says in Kiddushin, now Sora Yuchsin Olami Bavel, 10 groups of Jews came from Bavel with Ezra at the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. Kahani Leviv Yisraeli, Koinim Leviv Yisraelim, Chaloli, such Chalolim, Geri, Gerim, Charuri, freed slaves, Avodim Shachorim, Mamzeri Nisini Shtuki Vasuki, and the Kulan Matorin Lobe Zebazer, and all of them are able to intermarry. Now, we don't mean all 10 of them are able to intermarry. What we mean is, in other words, that within each subgroup, you have ones that can freely intermarry. Namely, Kohenim, Levim, and Yisraelim are completely Mutar Zebazer. Levim, and Yisraelim, and Chalolim, and Gerim, and Avodim, and Shachrorim are also freely allowed to marry one another. And Gerim, Geri, Charuri, Mamzeri, Nesini, Shtuki, Vasufi are all allowed to intermarry. So, at amat halacha k'Rabbi Elazar. So, how could you say the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar? According to Rabbi Elazar, if you're saying that a suffik is also to marry a suffik, then a mamzer would not be allowed to marry a shsuki, and one shsuki would not be allowed to marry another shsuki, because among the shsukim themselves, one might be a mamzer, one might not. So now we have a machlokes, Rav and Shmuel, who is the halacha like? Abaya sava like Shmuel, the Amah halacha ke Hillel. So Abaya holds like Shmuel, who says the halacha is like Hillel, like Hillel's braisa based on that Mishnah. So that's what it is. We have a braisa that was taught by Hillel, that the Pashtus, we don't mean Hillel as in Hillel and Shammai, the Pashtus, we mean a later Tana named Hillel. Anyway, his braisa says, makes it clear that kolon matorin lobe zebezeh. So therefore, so obviously, Shmuel holds like that. Therefore, Umuki lo Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov al libe de hilchosa. Therefore, going back to what we said in the machlokas of the Tana Kama and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov about the case of our Mishnah, where the couple remain married where they shouldn't have, and now they have a second baby, whether that baby is a suffolk mamzer or not, we want to make what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says go according to the halacha. Therefore, that forces Abaya to say, now, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is being makel and says that this baby can marry, even though he's a suffolk, can marry a mamzeres. That way, you don't have a contradiction between what we say the halacha is. Because on the one hand, the halacha is usually like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and the halacha is also, we're saying, like Shmuel is saying, the halacha is that a suffolk mamzer is allowed to marry a vade mamzer. So therefore, that necessarily requires us to say that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that. On the other hand, Rava sava like Rav. Rava agrees with Rav. He says the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, that only a vade mamzer can marry a vade mamzeres, but a suffolk can't marry a suffolk. So therefore, Muki lo Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov al libe de hilchosa. Again, therefore, he's forced to say that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov must be following that halacha. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov must be, according to Rava, the one who is machmir and saying that the suffolk of our Mishnah cannot marry a mamzeres, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, for the same reason, for the same reason, so that we don't have a contradiction between the two statements of what we say that the halacha is. Because on the one hand, the halacha is usually like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and on the other hand, Rab is saying the halacha is a suffolk can't marry a vade, and a suffolk can't marry a suffolk. Okay. Where do I get, says Abaya, that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov considers every suffolk like a vadai, and therefore that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is the one who's mekel and allows him to marry a mamzeres, even though he's only a suffolk mamzer? So Abaya says, I get it as follows. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Hareisha bo al noshim harbe. Suppose that a man had relations with many different women, and he doesn't know which ones, and now they might all be pregnant from him and he has no idea. The same way, if she had relations with many men, and she doesn't know which one she became pregnant from, the problem with that is, the upshot of it is, you're going to wind up that parents are going to be marrying children and brothers marrying sisters, because they're not going to know they're related to each other. And therefore, the whole world is going to be filled with mamzerim. This is what the pasuk means when it says, and that the land will be filled with zima. So in other words, the pasuk is warning you, don't do that to begin with. Don't go and start having relations promiscuously, because it can lead to this problem of mamzerus. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is calling it mamzerus, even though it's only suffic mamzerus. We don't know for sure that a son is going to meet up with his mother and marry her. We don't know that a brother is going to meet up with a sister and marry her, but that's suffic enough. It is enough for Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov to call him mamzerim. So Abaye says, you see, therefore, that he calls them mamzerim. So therefore, you see that he would be makel and allow them to marry, and allow these suffic mamzerim to marry each other.
Even though it could bring you trouble.
Well, that's the thing. So we're saying that we consider the suffic as if it was a vada. On the other hand, Rava Amalach, Rava says that's not a proof, because Hochi Kamar, because Rav Elazar ben Yaakov doesn't mean that they're going to actually be mamzerim. The pasuk that he's quoting, Mola Art Zima, the word Zima actually stands for Zu Mahi. What is this? In other words, that it's still implying that there's a suffix involved over here. So Rav Elazar ben Yaakov is not saying flat out that they're mamzerim. He's saying there's suffix mamzerim. Well, suffix mamzerim, then there's a suffix. As Rav said before, a suffix can't marry a suffix, or a vada can't marry a suffix. Okay, so Abaye and Rava have their respective opinions. The halacha, by the way, as usual, when we have a machloikas, Rav and Shmuel, in a matter of Isser and Heter, the halacha is like Rav. The halacha is also, when we have a machloikas, Rava and Abaye, the halacha is usually like Rava. So here, since we have Rava holding like Rav, then that means, in the end, the halacha is that, in fact, a suffix can't marry a vaday or a suffix. It might be in Sanhedrin. It's primarily in Kiddushin. The last parak of Kiddushin deals with all these issues of Yuchsin and Suffolk Yuchsin and whatever. So yeah, parak Asori Yuchsin. Okay, onward. Kiddushin, last parak. Okay, so the Gemara goes on. Since we quoted the first half of the Braisa, let's quote the second half and discuss it. Yeser Arkein Omer Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov goes beyond that. Not only are we saying that people shouldn't just be having relations promiscuously, because then you're going to have children who we don't know where they come from, and you can end up with possible cases of mamzerus. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says further, Lo yisa adam isha b'medina zu v'yelech v'yisa isha b'medina acheres. A man should not marry a woman in one country and then go marry a woman in another country. Meaning whether we're talking about when he's married to the two of them at the same time before Chaim Diaben Agershim, or maybe even we mean he the first one died or he divorced her and then he marries another one. Shemi is Davgu Zelazeb, because what's going to happen? You're going to have children that he has in each place. Eventually, those children may meet up with each other. V'nimtza Ochno, he says, Achoyse, and then you're going to have a brother marrying a sister from a half brother, which is also for Jews. Yeah. If they were Bnei Noach, it would be no problem, but because a Ben Noach is allowed to marry his sister from his father's side, but a Yid is not. Yeah. So the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? We find that when Rav would visit the city of Dardashir, someplace in Babel, he would make an announcement, who over here, which woman over here is willing to be my wife for a day? During the time or the days, however many days I'm going to be here in town. So in other words, he's planning to do a temporary marriage over here. Rav Nachman would do the same thing when he visited the city of Shchansiv. Now, Rav and Rav Nachman both have their wives back home, and they don't seem to be having a problem with this. So the answer is Shainet Abana to Piyashmayu. It's different with the Chachamim because their names are well known. If in fact these temporary wives do become pregnant from them, the women, it's not like when they're pregnant from an ordinary person, they're not going to bother remembering or caring who the father was. Here they're going to tell their kid, you're the son of Rav, you're the son of Rav Nachman. And that way he'll know that if he ever meets up with a daughter of Rav or Rav Nachman, then he knows not to marry her. Yeah, well, that's what the Gemara is going to discuss now. So the Gemara asks, how anyway are they allowed to get married like that and have relations? The Gemara is assuming that they're going to be having relations. Didn't Rava say it did? Tavurli nase. If a woman is proposed marriage, v'nispaisa, and she accepts, sricha leishiv shivanakim, she has to first go through shivanakim, because when he proposed and she accepted, she may have had chimud, she had the desire for relation, that may cause her to emit a drop of blood from her uterus, and that would make her a nidah. So in other words, if Rav comes to Dardashir and he announces man havya l'yoma, and a particular woman accepts, he's anyway not going to be able to have relations with her for 7 days. So what good is it doing? The answer is Rabbanan Shluchayu Havim Ashadri Umodilu. The answer is Rab and Rab Nachman, they would send a messenger ahead of time to inform, ahead of time, the messenger would go and then find a woman who's willing to go along with it. The idea behind it, by the way, is that Rab and Rab Nachman are concerned. They don't want to be. They know if the Kol HaGadol Mechaveira Yitzri Gadol Himenu, the greater a person, the greater his Yetzirah. So there's too much of a chance that if they're away from their wives for a significant period of time, that it may lead them to Hirhurim or Averis or whatever. So like this, they'll be able to accomplish it in a way that's mutter. So the 7 days could be taken care of before that. The Boyesema, another answer is you don't have to say that they sent Shluchim in advance. What they did is only they would be miyach. Now there's two different explanations among the Rishonim what that means. Does it mean that they would just designate them, they wouldn't actually marry them, or does it mean they would only arrange that the marriage is only for the purpose of yichud, not for the purpose of having relations? So that way that avoids the issue of chimud, because chimud is that the woman thinks, I'm soon going to have relations, I'm excited about that, but if she knows to begin with that he's only marrying her for the purpose of yichud, then he wouldn't have that. As we know, that it's not comparable when you have bread in your basket to when you don't. So in other words, just the fact that he knows that she is available to him, then that alone helps keep his Yetzihara in control. So Tosfos over here teaches that after all, the Tosfos learns according to the explanation that Yichud Havim Yachdi means they would be in Yichud. They had the option if they chose on the spot to do Bia, but the point is they didn't inform her in advance. Therefore, there's no problem of Dam Chimud. And after all, they would tell her the purpose of this marriage is for Yichud.
Right.
It could happen on the spot that he decides to go ahead with Bia, but that wouldn't cause Dam Chimud. On the other hand, again, there are Rishonim who learn that Yichud Havim Yachdi, who means that they were just designated for the purpose. They never actually went through with the marriage at all. It's available. She's available. If he wants to get married to her, then he's available. And the fact that he knows that she's available in a week for Bia, because she needs the shrine, she needs the Shiva Nikiyim, that alone, the Pas Basaloi helps keep his desires in check. No, well, that's we're not talking about over here. But even if they got married, it would only be a temporary thing, so they wouldn't necessarily go with all the preparations for a whole fancy wedding. But, well, that's what we just said. The reason we're there, that said, because Kol HaGadol Mechaveira Yitzri Gadol Himenu. That's exactly it. They have a greater Yetzirah, therefore they have to take greater steps to keep it in check. Yeah. Tosfos also, this Gemara is also in Yuma. The Gemara mentions this in Yuma as well. Tosfos over there explains that this pas basaloi only works because these Amoraim were already married. Had they not been married yet, then we wouldn't even say it. Tosfos over there learns they are allowed to be in Yichud with these women because, after all, even though they have to wait the Shiva Nikiyim, because after all, since they're already married, that itself helps keep the Yetzirah a little bit in control already. On the other hand, if it was talking about that they'd never been married yet, then even Yichud with them would be also during the time when they can't have relations. Tosfos over here learns differently, and that we're talking about that to begin with, they told them it's going to be only for Yichud, therefore there's no Dam Chimud, therefore no Shiva Nikiyim are necessary. So the Sicha we'll talk about in a second. There's a Sicha in Chelek Lamedalot on this. Hold on, we'll talk about this in a second.
We're not worried about him. Right?
We're talking, what do you mean we're not? The problem is that if she becomes pregnant, then well, I mean, he can't have relations with her until that Shiva Nikiyim is over. Yeah.
Right, but
no, we don't. No. Well, that's the thing. So Tosfos over here learns he'd be allowed to be. Tosfos over here learns that they would evade the issue of Shiva Nikiyim by telling her to begin with the purpose of this marriage is only for Yichud. Tosfos in Yuma learns differently, that they could tell them the purpose is for Bia, but because he already has a wife back home, therefore he's able to be in Yichud with her even during those Shiva Nikiyim. Tosfos also adds that if it, according to the explanation over here that the original purpose was only yichud, and it might happen that they have relations. If she becomes pregnant, then fine, he'd bring her with him to his city, so that we don't have the problem before that she's going to have a child and the child may not remember who his father is. In other words, so now the Gemara, according to Tosafos, the Gemara is sort of going back on the answer that it said before, that the Chachamim, everybody knows who they are, and the fact that they have children is well known. Tosafos at the end is saying that not necessarily, we don't even need that necessarily. The plan was, to begin with, they wouldn't have relations. If it so happened that they did, and she became pregnant, then he would actually take her with her back to his city, and he'd have two wives. Fine, it's before Chaim Devan Gershon. Fine, so when she'd send him a message, she'd tell him, I'm pregnant, and okay, the Gemara finishes off, Tana, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, lo yisa adam ishtei v'dayte l'gasha. A man should not marry a woman having in mind that he's going to divorce her. Mishum shenema al tachresh al reach hara, because the pasuk says, don't think evil about your friend, who yoshev l'batach itach, when he's living with you peacefully, meaning he has no idea, meaning in this case, he or she, rather, has no idea you plan to divorce her, so don't do that. So yes, there is a sicha in Chelek Lamed Dalet, a Rambam sicha, where the Rebbe addresses the point that the Gemara actually brings this halacha in two different places, in two different contexts. You have it here, and you also have it at the end of Gittin. The Rambam also brings it in two different places, one in Hilchos Yisurei Bia, in connection with the halachas we're talking about over here, and another one in Hilchos Geirushin. And the Rebbe discusses at some length in the sicha why the duplication. So one thing is, the Rebbe talks about why is it repeated, why does the Rambam repeat it in two different places? Mela the Gemara repeats lots of things. Shulchan Aruch also sometimes repeats things, but the Rambam generally doesn't. And also the Rambam formulates, he writes the halacha somewhat differently in the two places. So the Rebbe discusses, first of all, there are achronim who discuss, there's the Noisa Kalim and Shulchan Aruch there who discuss, what if, to begin with, when he marries her, he informs her that I'm marrying you, I'm a nas, that I'm going to be divorcing you shortly. Would that be allowed or not? Mitzad al tachrish al reyach hara, then it's not a problem, because she's not yoshev l'betach itach. She knows to begin with it's only temporary. On the other hand, based on the idea that the Gemara mentions at the end of Gittin, it's still maybe that's still not the right thing to do either. So in other words, what is the ikker they talk about, the Noisa Kalim talk about, is the ikker because you're making her feel bad, or is the ikker that you yourself are kind of acting in a dishonest way? So anyway, that ever goes on at some length in that sicha. He explains that Rambam, in fact, holds that both factors are true, which is why he brings it in two different places. There's the idea, in other words, even if you don't have the dishonesty issue, it's not like you have a flaw in the marriage to begin with when you start a marriage, amanas, that he's going to divorce her. And
some people
that may also to me, yeah. Okay. Anyway, the Rebbe ends up talking about also how this relates to the relationship between us and the Eibishter. We're married to the Eibishter. On the other hand, seemingly we're divorced in Golos. So how is that? How does that fit with that? How did Hashem, so to speak, marry us in the first place, knowing that he's going to send us in Golos? And the answer is because the Geirushin really is only from our perspective. From Hashem's perspective, he never divorced us at all. We're still just as connected to him as we were before. So therefore, we have to rebuild our relationship with Hashem. But Hashem himself, to begin with, Hashem himself all along has the same degree of relationship with us. So even though it's not a gerushin, it's only like a temporary separation, right? Okay. We said in the okay. So now the Gemara asks. Okay. So now let's say we have this case. Let's say we have this case where a baby was born after the Yibum, and we don't know whether it was from the first husband or the second. So fine, we said the baby himself is kosher because he's either from the first husband and he's kosher, or Yibum was necessary and he's from the second one. It's only the second baby that they have that we're talking about whether he's a Suffolk Mamzer. Now, what happens? Suffolk, the Yibum, Shavua Lachlik, the Nichse Misna. Suppose that now the Suffolk and the Yibum together come, they want to divide up the inheritance of the mess. Later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about that the Yibum inherits the property of the brother that he does yibum, that he does yibum with his wife. So now that brother is entitled to if yibum was necessary, then that brother, so Reuven died. excuse me. So Reuven died, Shimon wants to take over the property. On the other hand, then the son who's a suffolk comes and says, 1 second, that Reuven may have been my father. I'm entitled to the property. So that's the scenario over here. To diagram 159. So you have over here, you have two brothers where Reuben was married to Reuben was married to Miriam and died. Shimon did Yibam with her. Afterwards, they have a baby labeled over here, Suffet. We don't know, the baby is definitely Miriam's, obviously, but we don't know whether the father is Reuben or Shimon's. So if the baby is Reuben's son, he's entitled to the property. If not, wow. If it's Shimon's son, then Shimon is entitled to the property and the son will yarshin him only later on.
Right, eventually. You'll
eventually, him. Fine, but yeah. So what happens? Suffolk Omar Noba Misnahu. So the Suffolk is saying, I'm the son of the dead brother, I'm the son of Reuben, the Nichsi Didihu, the Nechasim therefore are mine, the Yavam Ama at Broy Didiat, the Yavam says, you're my son, the Leslach Veloy Midi, so they're Benichsi, so therefore you don't get anything from the Nechasim because I'm the one who gets them. Well, then what happens is, the brother, the first brother, Reuben.
The first brother said, what about the wife?
The wife is alive. It doesn't really matter whether she's alive or not for our purposes. Yeah.
Wait a second.
One second. The Yavam claims that I did Yibum validly. Therefore, I'm entitled to the Nechasim of my dead brother. The son, meanwhile, is arguing. The child who was born is arguing, I'm actually a son of Reuben. You shouldn't have done Yibum in the first place. No, the wife. Yeah.
If the son is his son,
then he's not yarshining anything right now. Yeah. So having mammon a mutu b'safik, so then it's a case of mammon which is b'safik because neither one has a chazaka, neither one has a greater chazaka than the other. So therefore, you can't say a moitzi mechaber l'varaya. There's no moitzi. The property is in limbo right now. Therefore, mammon a mutu b'safik chokin, and we know in that case they divided even. What about another case? Safik of neyavam shabol lachlus v'nichse misna. Let's now draw out the case further. Eventually, Shimon dies as well. He has property of his own. And he has son, he has children. From his own marriage, yeah. It doesn't really matter. I mean, if it was from his marriage with this woman, then maybe Suffolk Mamzerim, as we said before, but that's neither here nor there. Suffolk Mamzerim also inherit. But let's assume that he was married to another woman, so that there's no problem about the yichus of these children. So now he has children. And you also have the Suffolk, when you consider it, he may be their half-brother because they have the same father, Shimon, or they may be cousins because they're the sons of Shimon and he's the son of Reuben. So now when they're coming to divide Shimon's estate, Suffolk Amarahu Gavra Ba Misnahu. So therefore, so the Suffolk is arguing that are arguing, I'm the son of Reuben, v'nichsi didihu, and therefore all the nechosim that came from Reuben, go to me. Your father, Shimon, never should have taken them in the first place, because he shouldn't have done Yibum with my mother at all. B'nei Yavam Amri at Achinuat, and the B'nei Yavam say, you're our brother, umanosahu de islach badan, you have a portion with us, fine, we agree, in that case, then you're our half-brother, so you get a portion of Shimon's estate also, but not the whole thing. So now, Savar Abanan Kameder, Meshashi, Lamemem, Masnissi. The Chachamim in the Yeshiva of Remeshashi thought to say that this is the same as a case of a Mishnah later on in Or Masechta. It's not. We have a case over there in the Mishnah where something like this, where you have a case of a Suffolk like that, the case is over there. Again, where they didn't wait 3 months, there the case is she didn't wait 3 months and she remarried and had a child. And again, we don't know if it's Ben Tisha L'Rishon in Ben Shiva L'Achron. So you have the same problem. In other words, here it's a matter of Yibum, there it's a matter of regular marriage outside the family. But either way, the point is the same thing. We don't know whose son this baby is. So now, in that,
if it's like, let's say, 2 months,
well, that's the thing. We don't know. We don't know. Once she's visibly pregnant at the end of 3 months, then we count back 3 months and we see was she married to her first husband or her second husband at that point. The point is, we said on Amud Aleph, the case can be where at the end of 3 months she still doesn't appear visibly pregnant yet, but later on she ends up having a baby. So now we don't know, was it a 7 month from the first one or a 9 month from the second? Okay. So the Mishnah says over there, Ditnan, who any Yoda Shoisam, Behem Yoshinoisa. The Mishnah says over there that he doesn't Yarshin them, either one. So in that case, we're talking about where he doesn't Yarshin from either father because where each one can say you're the son of the other one. In that case, again, we're not talking about Yibum. We're talking about where they're two unrelated men. She was married to one man. Then he dies or divorces her and she marries another unrelated man. Now she has a baby. It's a suffix, whether it's from the first or the second. So each one, when he comes to inherit the children of the other children or the other Yoshim of that man, can say, you're not his son. You're the son of the other guy. So you have no business in all Yerusha. So therefore, so the Mishnah says, who any Yerushaitzim, behem Yoshin Oisei. On the other hand, they Yarshin him, because one way or the other, he's from either one or the other. So the same thing. V'hocha ipcha. So the Chachamim thought it would be here, it would be the other way around. Because over there they would tell him, you want part of the estate from either the first husband or the second. Bring proof that you're his son, and you can have part of the estate. And since he can't bring such proof, therefore he doesn't get either. Here it sounds like the other way around. He can tell them, bring a proof. After all, he has the greater chazaka. So here he can tell them, you bring proof that I am only your brother, and then you'll be able to get part of the estate. Otherwise, I should get all of it. But the Masharshi says to them, how are you thinking to compare? Over there, they are vadai. They are definitely the children of the first or the second husbands, respectively. In this case, they're both suffolk in the sense that the children of Shimon, not that they're suffolk whether they're Shimon's children, but it's a suffolk whether they're in line to inherit Reuben's property. If Reuben had a son, then yeah, the property goes completely to that son. Only if Reuben didn't have a son, does it go to his brother Shimon who did Yibum, and then from him to them. So therefore, they have a suffolk also. They can't say they're any more vadai in this property than he is, and he can't say he's any more vadai than they are. They're both suffered.
But the one from the second marriage, from the Ebum.
Right.
He has a great argument.
No, but that's the thing. So the Chachamim thought that maybe he has the greater argument. But now Rav Masharshi is telling them, no, not really. Because as far as having part of the estate, fine, he has a greater, but as far as the rest of the estate, he's no stronger, his position is no stronger than theirs, because he definitely gets a part of it either way, because if he's Reuben's son, he gets the whole thing, and if he's Shimon's son, then he gets a part together with his brothers. But as far as the rest of it, he doesn't have any more of a chazakah in it than they do. So how can he tell them, you have to bring a proof that I'm not your brother in order to get anything, or that I am your brother, rather, in order to get anything? Rather, if you want to compare it to a case in a Mishnah, says Rav Masharshi to them, you have to compare it to the following case. You're talking about when the suffolk and the children of the Yavam are coming to divide up the property of the Yavam himself. So we're not even talking about anymore the property that came from Reuben. We're talking about the property of Shimon himself. Then we can talk about. So then, they tell him, bring proof that you're our brother, and then you can take. Without that, then you're not entitled. So therefore, in our case, it would be similar. So Rashi explains what happens in our case over here then. So the part that they admit to him, he definitely takes either way. Because let's say, for example, there are three of them. Let's say, to keep things simple, none of them is a bechor, so we don't have to worry about double portions. Let's say, for example, before him, there had been a miscarriage or something.
Or a girl,
yeah. Okay. So let's say, for example, we're talking about three equal portions, let's say. So now, with the property that was inherited from Reuben. So one third of it he's getting regardless, because either he's Reuben's son and he's entitled to the whole thing, or he's Shimon's son and he's entitled to one third of what Shimon inherited from Reuben. So that Rashi says he takes without any further. The rest of it is moment I'm looking for suffolk, and therefore they're going to divide it. Therefore we're going to divide it equally. That's what Rashi says. Now what about another case? Suffolk of Ne Yavam Shabolachat Minichse Yavam Lebosser de Polig Yavam Yavam Minichse Misna. Let's say another case. What happens if we had before the case where the Yavam and the Suffolk themselves were coming to inherit Reuben's property, and we said it's Momana Mutal Suffolk, because neither one of them has a greater claim to the property. So we said they divided equally. Now what happens is, after they divided it equally, after they divided it equally between the Yavam and the Suffolk, Now the Suffolk and the Bnei Yavam are coming to divide up the Nechosim of the Yavam. Bnei Yavam Amri, so now the children of the Yavam of Shimon are saying, I see Raya Dachuna after Shkel, you bring proof that you're our brother, and then you're entitled to some of what we inherited from our father. Meaning, in other words, so we had half of the estate, half of Reuben's estate went to Shimon. Now, later on, the Bnei Yavam are saying that the Yavam's definite children are saying that if you can bring proof that you're a brother, then fine, you'll be entitled to part of that half that he inherited to begin with when he divided it with you. Again, we have like this. Reuben had died. Shimon did Yibum with his wife, but we're not sure whether it was a valid Yibum. They had a baby. We don't know if that baby is Reuben's or Shimon's baby. We're labeling him over here, Suffolk. Shimon has children. Let's call him a name. Fine. We'll call him, well, Levi usually is a brother of Reuben and Shimon. So fine, we'll call him Yankel. So fine, we'll call him Yankel. Shimon, meanwhile, has children of his own named Moshe and Aaron. So now what happens is, we said when, after Reuben dies, Shimon and Yankel are coming to say, we are fighting over it, so we say each of them gets half. Now what happens is, having gotten half, now later on, eventually, Shimon dies. Now his children, Moshe and Aaron, are arguing, look, we're definitely our father's Yoshim. You're only a Suffolk of our father's Yodish, because maybe you're his son, maybe not. So therefore, they tell him, I see Raya Dachuna after Shkel. They tell him, bring proof that you're our brother, and then you'll get a portion. And Omolahu Suffolk, and the Suffolk Yankel argues back to them, Monaf Shaychu, either way, I should be entitled. If I am your brother, hopefully Manosabadaihu, then yeah, I'm entitled to a portion together with you. The Iba Misnana, if I'm actually the son of Reuben, Havali Plot Pauga to Polagabuchan Badoi, then you have to give me back the half that your father took away from me to begin with. So what do we say now? So Rab Abba, Omar Rab says, Kom Dina. After the din has already been done, after the original split was done, then that remains that way. So we still say, we're not reversing that. We're not going back on that. Things stay the way it is as far as that. Now you have a second argument whether you divide with them. So then we tell them you'll have to bring a proof if you want any further part of the nechassim. So we don't say Yachalaku. Rabbi Yirmiyah Amar Hadar Dina. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, in that case, we're going to undo the din, meaning, in other words, that he has a valid point. They either have to give him back all the Nechosim that Shimon inherited from Reuben, or they're going to have to give him his portion as their brother.
And we don't look and say, well, this came from the original.
Well, we do. That's what Rabbi Yirmiyah is arguing. Rabbi Yirmiyah, so that doesn't matter what kind of Nechosim. No.
Where did it come from? It comes from originally. It's not what we're finding now. Is it from Shimon?
No, we're talking about stuff that he inherited from Reuben. We're talking about, for example, land, let's say, that he inherited from Reuben. So again, Rab Abba Omar Rab is saying that the fact that before they divided it up because of the Suffolk, we consider that a done deal. We don't redo that. Now we're in a situation, we assume whatever Shimon had in his possession when he died is considered definitely his. Now Yankel is coming to argue, I get a portion of it because I may be your brother. They tell him, you bring proof and then you're entitled to any of it. If not, then you don't get any part of Shimon's estate because you're not his son. No, that doesn't matter. That's the point. That is the point that Rav Abba is saying. Kom Dina, we leave well enough alone. The fact that originally Shimon got that property because of a suffix between him and Yankel, we say that doesn't matter. Kom Dina, we leave that as is. Even though, right. On the other hand, Rav Yirmiyah is saying Hodor Dina. Rav Yirmiyah says you're right. We have to unwind the whole thing. We start with, to begin with, that there was the original suffix, whether which one inherits from Reuben, Shimon, who is his brother, or Yankel, who may be his son. So then we said Chokin. Now what we say is, on the basis of that, we consider, not so much Chokin again, but now we say, either way, he's entitled to a portion of it, because either he gets the entire thing as Reuben's son, and Shimon never should have inherited in the first place, or he gets a portion of it together with the other brothers, together with the sons of Shimon. So, yeah. Okay, so it's getting late over here. We'll have to continue tomorrow, Beth Hashem. So we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, Beth Hashem. We're up to Lema Beplugta the Admin but Abonim commit to be about 10 lines from the bottom. Okay. Shkayach, everyone.